More!
Chicken lay. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming here in Sonoma County and beyond. It's Michelle Anna Jordan live in the studio. How are you doing this evening? Have you had a good weekend? Interesting weather. I loved how cool it was yesterday. It's like, yeah, summer's over, cool. And most people would get mad at me for saying that. You know, I really wish, even though I don't love daylight savings, because I don't like the shift, I like real time, I do love early mornings and long days when it's cool.
Yes.
You know, I just like cool and foggy, and it's like, oh, yeah. I like that.
It's inviting because especially when you wake up and it's super muggy and hot out, you kind of dread going out unless already warm in your bed, which actually isn't very fun when you want to sleep in and it's all
No, it's not
toasty.
Fun. I can't sleep if it's hot.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I really enjoyed yesterday and even today. Today was pretty cool as well. Not as cool as yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a bunch of yard work stuff going on yesterday, so I was very happy to see it being overcast.
And yeah, it is so hard to work in the garden
perfect
unless
timing.
You're a sun bunny. Mm-hmm. And you're not a sun bunny. I'm not a sun bunny. And of course, it's Father's Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean it doesn't have to mean anything to you? I'm wondering if it does.
It sets kind of a marker of the year, of the time of the
okay.
year. You know, when I was a kid, my parents did not live together. So mm-hmm. my dad would it was the time for us to have a special day for my dad. And he would come over
nice.
And it would
that's
be very
nice.
Mellow and, uh-huh. you know, it's inviting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, it's a day when I feel at odds with most people.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew my father. He died mm-hmm. when I was an infant.
Mm.
And so I've worked very hard much of my life to incorporate a feeling of having had a father. When I was a little girl, I don't have a father was sort of my identity was when people talked about their fathers. I didn't have one and I really stood out because that was not a time, I didn't grow up at a time when divorce was common.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were divorced, you pretty much like, if you watched I don't know if you watched Mad Men.
No.
Okay, it's interesting. I think it's the first and second seasons. And I think the woman is Helen. She moves down the street from Don and Betty Draper. And, oh, she's divorced.
Mm.
She had two kids, I think. Yeah, two kids, and she was divorced. And divorce kind of meant equaled tramp.
Oh.
That's just how it was in the 50s and 60s. And widowed, which my mother was a widow, and I always wonder, it's like, well, there were a lot of World War II widows and a lot, I mean, I think it was like 40,000, 43,000 people, men died, I think, in the Korean War, something like that.
Yeah.
So you'd think there were a lot of widows. We didn't know any.
Mm.
And so I was really the odd girl out because I didn't have a father and that those implications, you know, really stretched through the implication of it stretched through my life. But today I did something that I should have done years ago.
Mm.
I took my iPhone 8, and my favorite picture of my father and me, I have very few, is him holding me. I must be 3 or 4 months old, but it's very tiny. It's like 1 inch by 1.5 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a picture of it with my iPhone camera,
mm-hmm.
and it's now on my Facebook page. I could blow it up. And I could see it in more detail. So that was really sweet.
That is very sweet.
I loved seeing that. And like I said, it's only, I think there's one of me sitting on his lap. And those might be the only two photographs I have of him and me together.
Oh, my.
So it's always sort of a day. It's like, yeah, this really isn't my holiday, is it?
No.
But, you know, it's okay. It doesn't, I don't get upset. It's more like a contemplative day.
Yeah.
And then I wrote a feature story. It was interesting. I wrote a feature story that appeared on Wednesday in the Press Democrat. And it was about how about sausages for Father's Day? And I went through sausage makers and that sort of thing. And if you look around, it really does tend to be, the default is big, huge flavors. Yeah. And usually big, huge meat for your dad for Father's Day.
40-ounce steak.
Yeah, know. Exactly. And I got a list of some of the crazier ones I saw, which I'll talk about in a minute. But the letter I got was, why did you have to be so cliched, or something along those lines. You know, not all fathers eat meat. I'm a vegan. Mm-hmm. And when I ended up, the guy was really nice. He wasn't snotty, as a lot of vegans who write to me are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we ended up having a nice exchange through email. But I thought it was interesting that the letter I heard from other readers, but the first one I got was, you know, this is so cliched. Why can't you focus on fathers who are vegan?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't focus on anyone who's vegan. Thank you very much. Yeah. It's hard, you know, it is. It's very hard to cover niche diets.
It is.
Whether it's gluten-free, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, because there's a portion of any group, any niche group, that is extremely passionate. Mm-hmm. And I have found if you write about something in that arena, you either did it wrong, or they want you to do it all the time.
Oh.
And the responses that I've gotten have been so overwhelming that I've just told people, you know, I don't do gluten-free, I don't do niche topics, because they're really exhausting. And I think the people who should do that are the people who are involved in the specific industry.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure if you're not, if you don't contribute into that, because you can't really, I would say, encompass the lifestyle and know that all the nuances and things like that.
Yeah, there's that. And then it's also a lot of work. I mean, people, if you give one thing and you say this recipe is gluten-free, is naturally gluten-free, I get a lot of emails from people asking me, well, can you change this recipe for me into something gluten-free? Mm. And I could just do that all. It's like, I don't have to, you know, I can't do that for free.
Yeah.
So I just avoid niche marketing. I mean, niche topics for them. I mean, if something's naturally gluten-free or naturally vegan, I might mention it, but I don't do full features on that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, for me personally, I'm not vegan, I'm not vegetarian, but I love seitan, and so I'll try to.
You do? What do you love about it?
It's the texture and like the umaminess of it all. Just like it has, and when it crisps up really nicely. Mm-hmm. So if you are, you know, putting it over a fire or a really hot pan, mm-hmm. it'll crisp up, and it holds flavor really well. I find.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's. Not it's hard to find most of the time.
Now, there was somebody selling it at the farmer's market a couple years ago, but they vanished. Yeah. I don't know if they're still in business.
Yeah. But it's it's something I wanted to explore some more and get into. But, you know, something like tempeh, I wouldn't know what mm-hmm. to do at all.
Yeah.
It's a little bit too much of again, a specialty that
it's a specialty, yeah. And it takes skill.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to food, I am a generalist. Mm-hmm. And I did tell the guy that in the feature story about sausages, and it was really a look at local sausage makers, particularly Sonoma County Meat Company, but also Franco Dunn's One World Sausage. Franco's been on Beat Mouthful before, and he'll be on again. His sausages are wonderful. And then the other sausage makers that we have in the county. I don't know if you knew Yanni's.
No.
Yanni had a very small restaurant in Pengrove.
Oh.
And his sausages got so popular that in February, he and his wife closed the restaurant, and they're now distributing the sausages mm-hmm. available in Oliver's, I think Pacific, and they're also distributing to restaurants. So it's an interesting story, and he was on a long time ago. He and his wife both got laid off for their jobs, and they started making sausages. Okay. And here they have this huge, successful second career.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then all, you know, local, all the local grocery stores, Oliver's, all the ones I just named, they all make in-house sausages.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Richard Caggiano, who Richard, the last time I always like to tease Richard, he's a great guy from the East Coast. he began making sausages and is still making sausages at what used to be the Petrikowski Smoked Poultry Company off of Skillman or on Skillman in Petaluma. And yeah. Petrikowski made the most exquisite smoked duck I've ever tasted in my life. It was fabulous, and it was a really important ingredient to me, and I'm very upset that I can't get it. Mm. But Richard started making his sausages there, primarily initially pork sausages. Ooh. And just a fabulous selection, Sicilian style, different ones, really a great sausage maker. And this one night he was leaving after having been on Mouthful, and he said, chicken does not belong in sausages, ever. It should never be used in sausages. And now his biggest sellers are chicken sausages.
Oh, yes. Chicken apple sausages.
Chicken, yeah, that's it. Do you know where those first came from?
No.
It was the 1980s, mid-1980s, and it was a company, Gerhardt's Napa Valley Sausages. They came out of the gate with chicken apple and curried chicken apple, and they were hugely successful. And it took a few years, but there soon came along a number of imitators, and then you started seeing all different kinds of chicken sausages. But mm. those were the two that started it.
Nice. That's I must thank them. Thank you so much for doing what you did.
And then Ryan Rinn, who's been on Mouthful as well fairly recently, he does not make chicken sausages and won't. Hmm. He has no interest in making chicken sausages. And he does a lot of sausage. He makes a lot of sausage, and he distributes it to a number of grocery stores, several in Sonoma County, but also in Berkeley and in San Francisco. His feeling, other than I don't really get the impression that he likes them very much, he says you have a much higher percentage of salmonella contamination with chicken.
Oh.
And that he tries to keep his plant as close. No one can keep it at absolute zero. It just occurs in the environment. Mm-hmm. You just have to have good practices. But he keeps it in his production facility there on Sebastopol Road in Santa Rosa. He keeps it as low as humanly possible, and he said that if he were to ever make chicken sausage, he would have an entirely separate plant. He would have different equipment and an actual different location if he were to do it, so that he could control bacteria more efficiently.
That's a lot to take on.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot, especially when you're doing the quantity. I think by numbers, he wouldn't reveal exactly how many pounds he'd made a day, but it's a lot. I think it's more than anyone in Sonoma County is making.
Wow.
Really, hundreds and hundreds of pounds.
My goodness. That's a lot to take on.
It is. So anyway, the substitution I recommended for dads who didn't eat, who don't want to eat meat, didn't want sausage, whatever, vegan, hate soy hot dogs.
Mm.
I hate soy hot dogs.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
And this whole thing of faux meat now that's supposed to taste like hamburger. Ugh.
Mm.
Not interested.
I must say I love soy riso. It's something that...
What is it?
It's, I believe it's tofu chorizo. So it has all the spices. But it's like the spices are perfect, but the spices are so strong in chorizo that...
Yeah.
You can carry that over, and also you're not getting as much of the fat, so it's less heavy, and like it's sitting in your stomach, and you feel
you
a little bit better.
Chorizo is heavy.
I do personally. It's
well, tell me what kind of chorizo you get.
I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you.
Can
the
you tell
exact
me where
name.
You get it?
I would probably get it at Safeway.
Okay, that's why.
Yeah.
You're getting Mexican style chorizo.
Mm.
And you're probably getting bulk mass-produced Mexican-style chorizo, and it's a different style, but it's very heavy. And to me, it's not so much that it's fatty, it's that it's 50% grease.
Yeah.
So, darling, do I have mm-hmm. something wonderful for you?
Ooh.
Well, Sonoma County Meat Company makes a Spanish fresh chorizo.
Nice.
That will be very light and delicate. But Franco... For One World Sausages. In fact, I have two packages in my refrigerator right now. Today he had oh God, Michoacán, I think. I think it was Michoacán style chorizo, which he sold bulk. So I just have 1 pound in bulk. Mm-hmm. And then they gave me, because they had one package left and it was, it should have been sold last week and it wasn't. They gave me a package of chorizo verde to take home. And chorizo verde is one of my all-time favorite sausages.
Ooh.
And it's very, you know, you can find aged chorizo verde, but I like the fresh. And both of these are fresh from Franco. But he makes about 6 different kinds of chorizo.
Mm-hmm.
They're not greasy.
Oh, good.
They are not greasy at all. And the thing is, with your kind of chorizo, don't ever read the ingredients list.
Yeah.
Do not read it. But with, and that's true of the Mexican chorizos. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, it's not that bad, but it's snout. It's intestine, yeah. It's ear, that sort of thing. So, and a lot of those things have a type of fat that would be really sort of weighty and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start getting, and I'll get you, I will make sure you have some, because it's, it will transform everything, and then you don't have to eat that nasty GMO soy anymore.
Yeah, especially like if I get a burrito, I'll say, oh, I haven't had chorizo in a while, and I'll get it, and I was like, oh. Now I have to take a nap.
Yeah, that's because it's the way it's made and the type mm-hmm. of it, but it's not all that way. It is Father's Day, so I say we play more music than we usually do. We're going to take a little listen here.
They call me Daddy. Daddy Rolling Stone. They call me Daddy. Daddy Rolling Stone. Girls, you think you had loving. Girls, you think you had your fun. Well, girls, you ain't had nothing until I come along. Fun at night. I have my fun anytime I want. Cause anytime I have babies right. Cause I'm a daddy. I'm a daddy. They call me Daddy Rolling Stone. I'm a daddy roller. I'm a daddy rolling stone.
Ah, Willie DeVille, Daddy Rolling Stone. That's off a compilation, a tribute to Otis Blackwell, great songwriter. Anyway, we're playing Daddy songs tonight. If you've been listening to Mouthful for very long, you know what the final song will be, my sentimental favorite for this day. So I was looking, after I got this thing about, you know, not all fathers eat meat, and yeah, I know that. So I suggested a carrot dog, and it's really good. Mm-hmm. It's really, actually really, really good. What you want to do, you just put a carrot in the toaster oven or your oven or on a grill. Takes a while. Takes, if it's like, you know, 1 1/4 inches in diameter, it's going to take you a good 40 minutes to roast it whole at least. And you want it not mushy, but you want it tender. Mm-hmm. You put it on a good sourdough roll or a good hot dog bun or something. And then... mustard and onions.
Nice.
You don't need you don't want relish. You don't want all that other stuff. But the mustard and the onions just go really well with the roasted carrot. But so I went online to see what the interwebs were saying about what fathers were eating today. Oh my God.
Oh,
it almost made me not want to eat anymore, ever. First, there was, well, one of the things I found was meatloaf meatballs.
Interesting. But I would think that regular meatballs are kind of in a meatloaf.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You're a smart guy. Yeah. It's like, what?
Yeah,
it's like, that's ridiculous. Then there was pizza macaroni and cheese.
My stomach already hurts thinking about
that.
It's
like macaroni and cheese with sliced pepperoni and a bunch of other stuff to make it pizza-ish. There was a pineapple bun burger. And it's two thick slices of pineapple grilled and used as the bun, and then a big old honking slice of raw red onion, a bunch of slices of bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, big old hamburger patty, mm-hmm. and then another, and then all between pineapple slices and about a good 5 or 6 inches high, so it's impossible to eat like you would eat a burger.
Oh, yeah.
It was really, really ridiculous. And then I noticed a new thing. Mm-hmm. Caprese everything. Do you know what caprese is?
Oh, isn't that the balsamic basil and mozzarella?
Oh, gosh, what has happened to this world? It didn't used to have balsamic vinegar on it. The original Hawaiian, the original Italian salad, sliced tomatoes, sliced mozzarella, olive oil, mm-hmm. Maybe a little garlic, salt and pepper, and basil leaves. Mm-hmm. That's the traditional one. Americans started putting balsamic vinegar on it a few years ago.
Ah, yes.
And I just I don't like the sweetness of balsamic vinegar. It's too sweet. I don't want something sweet. But now I noticed on this thing about what your dad wants to eat, caprese everything. There was a caprese burger, caprese steak, caprese chicken. And it was pretty much whatever the food was, then with a slice of mozzarella, a slice of tomato, and a piece of basil.
Hmm. Well, there's a bit of fusion there.
Yes. Yes, and that just seems to have, I guess it's because there's not really any American cuisine unless you go back to Native Americans. And then there were thousands of Native American tribes, so there's not an overarching one.
Yeah.
There's not anything that we can say, well, this is our heritage. And what our heritage has been is the pockets of, well, here's the Italian community and those fabulous ravioli that Rachel Ansiegesio made, for example. But there's the specialties of the various groups of people who came here.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as we've grown more self-conscious in what we eat and, on one hand, more thoughtful about it, but also more competitive, it seems that we're taking a lot of liberties when it comes to combining things and also inventing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
kind of
I'm such a purist. You know, for better and worse, that's just how I am.
Yeah. Don't get it twisted. Just get it straight from the source.
You get it from the source. And I was talking to somebody about, we're going to talk about mushrooms. We're probably going to take one more musical break. And then we're going to come back and talk about mushrooms, because I think mushrooms really illustrate the point that I'm making quite well. So now we're going to hear Slow Walkin' Daddy from Pear Ubu. a special edition of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB. It's Michelle and Anthony. We're just chatting and listening to music because it's Father's Day. Hope you are having a nice day. Anthony, my engineer and increasingly co-host, which I love, is going on tour.
Yes.
So where are you going? You play drums with?
Baron Alter. We're a local doom black metal band.
Doom black metal.
Yes. So it's kind of the roots of doom metal kind of comes from Black Sabbath. So think like very atmospheric, a little bit droney. And then black metal had started up in the Nordic area of Europe. It's very fast, very... the vocals are very high-pitched, screamy, whereas
Doom
is very
low. Why is it called
black? I can't really tell. I think it's just very just dark.
Because it's dark, okay.
Yeah. We also, being in this part of the country, there's Cascadian black metal, which is... It stems from the Pacific Northwest? Yeah. Okay. So Wolves in the Throne Room is a great example of that. They're from the Olympia area. And we have a really great scene here for that.
I had no idea. Yeah. I had no idea until recently that there were so many types of metal.
Oh, yeah.
I sort of know heavy metal, hair metal, and then there was this kid who worked for me when I was running a restaurant who was really into speed metal.
Nice.
And that just made me want to crawl under my bed and plug my ears. Speed metal does not work for me.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the whole progression, you know, it started getting a little bit more increasing. And like that, I was really turned off by a lot of like fast, really fast stuff. Like I started with thrash and then I was like, okay, death metal's a little bit too like growly. It's like a little too intense. And then
yeah, when you say drone, there's a drone element. I never would apply that. I would never think of metal as having that quality.
Yeah. There's a band called Sun who actually are named after a guitar amp company, and their signature tone is essentially hitting a sustained chord and letting it ring out, and just it has tons of sustain, so the note holds for a very long time, and that is the sound. It's there are no drums to mainly.
Why is it called metal, then?
I guess it's just the aggression. It's the tone. It's the level of distortion and
because I think of metal. Like I have gotten into arguments with people. Led Zeppelin is not a metal band. I'm sorry, they're not a metal band. I think of metal as arena rock.
Yeah, and
Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, and I guess at the time Led Zeppelin was considered metal because it was harder than rock. I think that's where some of the phrase was coined.
But when they were first around initially, no one used the word metal.
No. I think I vaguely remember seeing that in a biography about Led Zeppelin, but I mean Black Sabbath was already doing their thing, but it had really been categorized. It was just kind of like really spooky,
yeah,
like spooky rock, I guess, spooky psychedelic rock.
Yeah, spooky. I like the, but the whole arena rock thing just never worked for me.
Yeah.
I was more like, you would never call Nirvana metal.
No.
To me, Nirvana is like the opposite of metal in a certain way, even though they're really loud. To me, that's sort of the opposite of what I've always thought of as metal.
Yeah.
And you've definitely expanded my view, though I haven't heard much.
Yeah, perhaps we can have a song one of these days on Mouthful if the topic is just on point. But yeah, like Nirvana's Bleach, that is a very dirty record. It sounds just nasty.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. It's very, very raw. And there's a lot of elements where it was influenced a lot by Black Sabbath and you know, Led Zeppelin and a little bit of thrash too, it sounds like in that record. So
interesting.
Yeah.
I have a lot to learn. That's always a good thing to know.
Yeah, there's a whole rabbit hole to go down when it comes to metal.
I find it fascinating. So this is Mouthful, though, so now we have to go back to food.
Yes.
bring over the bag. Why don't you get that bag of mushrooms and bring them over? When Anthony returns, his first day back, we will be featuring Gourmet Mushrooms. Gourmet Mushrooms has been in Sebastopol since the late 1970s, and it's a really interesting story about how they came about. And I'm not going to tell you a lot of that right now, but I'm going to talk a little bit about cooking mushrooms, because I don't know if we're going to get into that when I have the president of the company. And I think we're also, knock on wood, we might have the founder, Malcolm Clark,
nice.
If he's in town. And he was here a long time ago, one of Mouthful's early guests. He's a Canadian biologist, fascinating man, and he retired about 10 years ago, and he now spends 6 months in Thailand and 6 months here in Sebastopol.
Ooh.
So he'll be talking about how he determined that Sebastopol was perhaps the best place, or one of the two or three best places in the Northern Hemisphere for growing shiitake mushrooms.
Oh, perfect.
And that's what... That was the first mushroom that he began to cultivate and perfected cultivation. I think he might have been the first. There might have been someone in Japan doing it, but he perfected the technique. And they are no longer doing shiitakes.
Mm.
They are no longer foraging. They were once the largest foragers. And a lot of the foraged mushrooms from the Pacific Northwest were going to Europe, which for a long time had a much bigger appetite for specialty mushrooms than Americans.
Mm.
I don't know if that's still the case because they're much more common here now. But they're now concentrating on 7 varieties. And I visited them last Wednesday. And they sent me home with a box of 4 types of mushrooms. And what I have done, and this is what I will do when I'm trying to get my way around an ingredient that I want to experiment with, I'll find the simplest way to cook a particular ingredient, and then I'll cook it that way several times.
Yeah.
And vary it even slightly. So what I'm doing with these is sauteing them and melted separately, the 4 different types, sauteing it in melted butter.
Mm-hmm.
And just a little bit of salt and a little bit of pepper, and that's it.
Yes.
And, you know, I think a lot of people, they put mushrooms, and if what people are used to is only the white mushroom, they almost have no flavor. A little bit like dirt, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah.
And then they absorb. They absorb, you know, balsamic vinegar, tomato sauce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're kind of, yeah, they're more of a texture. They're more of an absorber. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, you have to cook them for a really long time to get the flavor out, say, if you're making stroganoff or something.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that you have to do that with a white mushroom is they have so much water.
Yeah.
And you have to cook them for a long time to get them to give up their liquid. Then you have to boil off that liquid, and then you start to concentrate their flavors a little bit. You're a good cook, I can tell.
Oh.
These mushrooms, and we're going to look and we're going to see, we have Alba clamshell, brown clamshell, trumpet royale, and,
let's see.
One other kind. It's very much like the brown clamshell, but it's, can we scroll down?
Yeah. So there's a brown
velvet pioppini. I think it's the other one is the velvet pioppini.
Yes.
So what I'm going, velvet pioppini, brown clamshell. What did I say? Alba clamshell, which is just white. And then the trumpet royale, which is, in a certain way, it's similar to a porcini.
Mm-hmm.
It's big. Some of the ones they gave me, they must weigh 6 to 8 ounces each.
Yeah.
I tried roasting them whole. That was the other thing I did. So I just put a mushroom into a toaster oven so that I don't have to, you know, have the big stove on. Just put it in there. It took about 45 minutes for it to get tender.
Yeah.
And then sliced it up, and it's really quite delicious. So that's what I'm doing is I'm just sauteing each of these in butter until they're tender enough. I'm not adding any wine. And sometimes I'll add wine if it's taking something a while to get tender and it seems like it needs some steam.
Mm-hmm.
I'll add white wine, but I'm not doing that. And these all soften up fairly much more quickly than commercial mushrooms because you don't have that water. They're not going to release much liquid. Mm-hmm. Very small amount of liquid goes into the substrate that they're grown in.
Yeah.
Much less than other mushroom producers. So their flavor initially is, or the mushroom itself is very concentrated.
Nice.
And then the flavors are very concentrated.
Lovely.
And then once you have those sautéed mushrooms, and really, I don't think anything really improves on that. You can make a more complicated dish, and you know you don't want to eat sautéed mushrooms every day.
Yeah.
But I don't think anything that you could think to add improves on just the simple flavor of a really well-grown mushroom.
Exactly. And, you know, they kind of say that about meats.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't want to mask it. You don't want to color it up. It is as it is.
Yes. And you just need a couple supporting characters.
Yeah. Just enhance what you've got in there.
Exactly. And I think one of the ways to enhance what you have with mushrooms, and I talk about in my column that comes out this Wednesday, that's what I talk about, is I talk about these mushrooms. So you have these beautiful sautéed mushrooms, and then what do you do with them? Mm-hmm. Put them over creamy polenta.
Ooh.
Really good. Fold them into an omelet. Toss them with a little pasta if you want. Mm-hmm. Really simple. You don't need anything else. Just a pasta that is, I like actually pappardelle, mm-hmm. which is a little whiter. Add some chopped Italian parsley and a bit more pepper, and you have a great meal.
Ooh, that's fantastic.
And then the ones that, the Trumpet Royale, they do one thing really interesting. They look a little bit like a porcini in that they're bigger. Mm-hmm. But for chefs, not for the retail market, but for chefs, they will take the container that the mushroom is growing in, and it's this plastic container, special plastic container from Japan. Japan perfected the container. And then there's the sawdust, the all-organic oak sawdust. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of other things in there as well. And a small amount of water, and then it's inoculated with mycelium. Mm-hmm. And the mycelium grows in the special room. The mycelium grows until it fills the bottle. And then when it's filled the bottle, it's transferred to another room with another different temperature, and the lid comes off, and it fruits, because that's what mushrooms are. Mushroom is the fruit of the mycelium, and it fruits. So what they do for certain chefs is they'll take the bottle of Trumpet Royale, and they'll choose one mushroom that they think, and they'll be little at this point, but they'll choose this one mushroom and they'll get rid of all the others.
Huh.
And so it grows huge.
Yeah.
It just grows enormous.
Oh, yeah. It's not competing with anything else.
Exactly. Everything is going into this one mushroom. And then, I mean, it's like a mushroom steak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do, I'm still experimenting with it. I have five more at home. So we'll see what I'm going to do. And then another thing I like to do, and the recipe is in, the column on Wednesday, is to make strudel.
Ooh.
And you can make, you know, most people think of strudel as really thin layers of the dough that flakes off, you know, like apple strudel or something. But there, I have a very simple recipe that anyone can make that is not difficult, even slightly. And it's not difficult to make the dough, and it's not difficult to work with the dough.
Fantastic.
And then you saute the mushrooms up in advance. You have some grated cheese. I like to use St. George cheese. You put the mushrooms on. You put some green onions. You seal it. You bake it. And you have a fabulous meal.
Nice. Like a nice baked pie of sorts.
Yeah, almost like, yeah. It's along those lines. Yeah. Only it's easier to serve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can, one strudel will, you'll get 6 to 8 slices.
Ooh.
And you can serve, you can cut each slice into pieces and have an appetizer. So really wonderful way to deal with mushrooms. And I'm going to give you a preview. So here's something that makes Mouthful worth listening to all this time. But this is also in the column on Wednesday. On almost every Friday, Gourmet Mushrooms, which is located in the same little piece of land as Mary Edwards Winery up on 116, almost to Forestville.
Mm-hmm.
Every Friday from 1 to 3, they have a farm sale.
Ooh.
Open to the public. And whatever mushrooms they have the right quantity of are available at wholesale prices.
That's awesome.
You can get a sack of certain mushrooms. I think like maybe the brown clamshell, if I remember correctly. Don't quote me on this. 3-pound bag for like $15.
That's amazing.
The maitakes, when they have the maitake, $30 for 3 pounds.
Ooh.
And you know how far three pounds of maitakes grow long. And maitake is one of the more expensive mushrooms. And it's one of my favorites. But they're $15, $20, or $30 for the bag. You have to pay in cash. And it's just whatever is available at the time. And if you think 3 pounds of mushrooms is a lot, it is. But there's two things you can do. Well, three things. You can have a party.
Yes.
You can get your neighbors to go in with you, and you each get a pound or, you know, half a pound.
Yeah, so, call up your friends, say, hey, I'm going down.
How much do you want?
Yeah.
Exactly. The other thing you can do is you can fry the mushrooms. Fry them up with butter and a little bit of salt, and then pack them into freezer bags.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
And there you have instant, almost instant mushroom soup, mushroom risotto, mushrooms for an omelet, that sort of thing. I've done it before, but I'm testing it again just to see how it goes. But it's always been just fine. Don't freeze them raw. Freeze them after you've cooked them.
Oh, cool. And then in terms of drying, are there certain mushrooms that you want to avoid drying because it will affect if they're too small, if it's just going to ruin its integrity or at all? Like,
I am not an expert.
No.
However, we will have an expert on certain mushrooms. I know certain mushrooms, wild mushrooms especially, their flavors are actually intensified when they're dried and then rehydrated. For example, one of my favorite wild mushrooms, black chanterelles, that flavor is really concentrated when it's dried, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Really, really beautiful. That's a very good question. Yeah. And I have someone who lives near me who dries mushrooms, so we'll get her to talk about it.
Oh, delicious. Yeah, I just recently tried, I believe it's Jewels of the Forests.
You've been there.
Jerky.
Yes, they have to. Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us what you thought of the jerky.
I thought it was very good.
Dave, can you describe it? And we should say, real quickly, Jewels of the Forest is a little mushroom shop next to Buddy's Pizza in that little tiny shopping center at the corner of Pleasant Hill Avenue and Bodega Highway.
Mm-hmm.
It's where there's also the West Side, I think it's West Side Cafe, which is a very sweet little place.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the jerky.
Yeah, it has a very almost like a dried apricot texture. It's it's tough, but it's not overly tough. The flavor,
jerky should be tough, shouldn't it?
But it's not to the point where you're just chewing on leather.
Uh-huh.
You know, it'll break apart, and then as it sort of rehydrates in your mouth, it starts to kind of disintegrate in your mouth a little bit. Kind of spreads out some more, and they have multiple different types of flavors.
And are the flavors natural flavors or added flavors?
I believe they're natural.
Okay, so it's different types of mushrooms.
Yeah, I can't recall exactly which one that I had. I do remember it was the spicy kind.
Okay.
Like, so it would almost be like a peppered
jerky. Maybe they're adding pepper or something, yeah.
Yeah, I think they might have a sriracha one. They have teriyaki variety.
Oh, so they are adding some flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah. My grandson just started working there.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's his job. So far, his job has been packaging, weighing, and sealing the mushroom jerky. And he can walk there from where we live, so it's perfect from him.
Absolutely perfect. Yeah, and it's great to see something like that that's local, that's in our area, that it seems to be taking off quite well.
That's good to know. I haven't had a chance to stop by yet. Hasn't been there very long, has it?
No, it's fairly recent.
A few weeks.
Yeah. It once was that frozen yogurt shop that was there that I think closed maybe like a year and a half ago, and I think it was kind of.
I never go. I don't like frozen yogurt.
Yeah, but I picked it up over at Pacific Market in Sebastopol. That was one.
Oh, so they also have a label.
Uh huh.
Oh, is the label Jewels of the Forest?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you can find it in. Depending on the market, I'm sure they would probably have it at Oliver's, and you just find it in kind of like the dried snacks area. I wouldn't go to the. dried fruit section.
Mm-hmm. But dried snack, where the dried seaweed is maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I heard they possibly started on the East Coast.
Oh.
So I heard that they were pretty big distributors on the East Coast, but it's two guys who live in Occidental.
That's cool.
Who are dealing with this current location. Mm-hmm. And I want to invite them to be on the show. But I don't want to sound like an authority because I'm not yet. it's good to see something like that having enough momentum that there's an actual little storefront for mushrooms. Do we have time for two more songs?
Let's see.
Do you think?
I reckon we have time for one song and one closing song.
Okay. Lily's Daddy's Cadillac. We'll make it a Willie DeVille double. Lily's Daddy's Cadillac by Willie DeVille. That wraps up our Father's Day show. Time flies even when you don't have extra guests on Mouthful, doesn't it?
Exactly. Like you were saying, this is our dinner side conversation.
That's right. And good luck to you on the tour.
Thank you so much. We're having our local show at the Arlene Francis Center on the 22nd. So that's June 22nd.
Friday night, I think.
Yeah, this Friday night.
Excellent.
Yeah, so come on out, rock out.
Have fun.
Thank you.
And with luck, I will find the Eric Repair. I'm thinking now that it was October of 2008. I will try to have that for you next week. But if not, meet me back here for another live and yummy episode of Mouthful, Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming. Have a great rest of the evening and have a great week.